you're financially independent when you have reached 25 times your annual living expenses in an investment vehicle. Now, if you have real estate or some other passive income that's coming in the background, you can do a little math to subtract that. But at its core, if you're going just on investment assets, if you have 25 times your annual expenses saved in an investment vehicle, you have reached financial independence.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to six figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. Today is going to be a pretty cool one. I've got a guest today of actually someone that I used to consume their content when I was on my journey to paying off all my debt, which I've shared on this podcast before. So these guys, him and his partner, I'll introduce him in a second, were some of the people that helped guide me on that journey. So you guys are going to get a ton of value from this podcast. And I'm excited to welcome Mr. Jonathan Mendonza to the podcast, one of the co-hosts of the Choose FI podcast. Jonathan, thanks for being here, man.
Ryan, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, dude. So to kick this thing off, so your podcast is called Choose FI, the FI being financial independence. How do you guys explain financial independence to people who are new to your movement and new to what you guys are doing?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a hard sell, right? What does it look like to get to the point where working is optional, right? This isn't a mandate that you can't work or shouldn't work or that you need to leave your job, but like, what would change about your life if you weren't if you weren't working just for the money anymore? You know, if you weren't the starving artist, or if you weren't just trying to figure out how to keep the lights on, pay the bills, maybe you would become the starving artist. Maybe you would be in a completely different industry. What does it look like to craft a life for yourself where you're not dependent on the paycheck and do it not in your golden years, you know, 65 beyond this what society has set aside for, hey, this is what you can do with what you want. Enjoy your tailwind. No, let's reclaim that and bring it into our prime years. You know, your best years, 30s, 40s, 50s. How many of us exert our best years in effort or pursuit of someone else's goals? It's just, I feel like it's suboptimal. And so the idea of financial independence, getting to the point where working is optional, is not like this elusive, well, that would be nice, but it's a framework, it's a mathematical equation, and it's replicable if you know the rules. And the great thing about this, if you think about this like a board game, you can't make the choice not to play. It's not optional. If you're just saying, well, you're playing, you're just not winning, right? We're all in this game. And if you know the rules, you have a shot at crafting something incredibly cool for yourself.
So when did you... Were you always aware of this kind of like financial independence lifestyle and that people were doing this? Or was this something where you were just like, I know me personally, one day I just had to like pull my head out of the sand and realize that like, hey, this, if I don't take control of this, it'll just control me.
Yeah, I think much like your audience, what's really cool about this is actually the era in which we live now. We live in the era, it's a super information highway, right? I mean, it's never been easier to access as long as you're willing to ask a question, what do I not know that I don't know, right? And so for me, oldest of five kids, same parents, and my dad was a community college professor, mom stay-at-home mom, like you can do the math. Like, you know, we had enough. We had our needs were met. We didn't have much more than that. And from financial advice, basically the best of what I could get was, you know, don't go into credit card debt. It's not a lot to work with. It's better than some people get, admittedly, but it's not one of these force multipliers that 10x your financial plan. And so I think there was always this like itch that I was trying to scratch that was like, well, what would it look like to do better with my money, to do better, you know, for the next generation, for myself and for my kids? And I was starting to look for those questions. And so, you know, in the late 1990s, I was in English class and the teacher introduces us to this tool that we can use for our research papers called Google. And one of my first questions is, what is, you know, what does a great career look like? What a great career. I mean, we've all done some variation of this search, top 10 professions and whatever. And Google serves up to me, I think on this list of 10, pharmacy was somewhere in there. And I was like, all right, this is it. This is what the internet's telling me. This is a pretty unformed question. And of course, this is like, you know, becoming almost a cliche story with the benefit of 10 years of hindsight. I would hope that there was slightly more involved with my chosen profession. But I do think that so many of us have this script that society hands down to us. These are the jobs that will guarantee your success. This is what you have to do. And it's a very limited option of like 10 jobs. And I don't have any peers that are doing anything different. You know, all my peers are teachers and firefighters and officers. And then I have this list of 10 jobs that apparently are going to, you know, crush it. So I picked pharmacy. Now that is a 4 years of undergrad, and then it's 4 years of pharmacy school, and I graduated, and now I'm making this great, you know, entry level six figure salary, but it right along with that comes six figures of student loan debt, and so in my case it was $168,000 of student loan debt, and it is a lot harder to pay off the debt than it was to take it off, you know, yeah. than it was to take it out.
I can attest to that.
Right, and not fun. I mean, there's a story there. But I paid it off over about a period of 4 years. Now, I should say that this wasn't happening in a vacuum. You don't just keep your head down, you do this one thing. You're looking for more information. If you make this crazy intentional decision to pay off your debt, you're not going to come to the end of that and just say, okay, now what? Because like just the fact that you're willing to be this intentional, this focused, means that you have plans and dreams for your life, right? And so these other questions, the great thing about questions is you're not limited to just one. You know, one was, what is a great job? And that question kind of went a little bit south. I have mixed feelings on that. We can talk about that later. And then it was, all right, I have this debt. How do I pay it all down? And I latched onto personal finance figures in the space, like Dave Ramsey and others, people that were really motivating and convinced me of the need to pay off this debt. But like, to me, paying off the debt's kind of just like getting back to broke, right? In an ideal world, I never would have had it, but I'm really not ahead. I'm just back to where you are at birth. I'm a dependent again, you know, I'm still relying on the income, the paycheck. And so, you know, and I'm kind of going back in time here, but some of the other questions looked like, what's next? What else is there after this point? What does it look like to crush my money game? And I stumbled on this community, the financial independence community, and there were different people in there that for me consolidated certain ideas that formed this strategy that we're talking about today. One of those was Mr. Money Mustache. He was blowing up in 2012, 2013. Yeah. He talked about this idea of the shockingly simple math to early retirement. And we can talk about that in a second. Another one was, what does it look like to invest in a simple common sense manner that doesn't involve having a guy that may or may, or gal, that may or may not have my best interest at heart? You don't know. Like, I've talked to financial advisors. Even a good financial advisor views the entire industry as a water full of sharks. And is telling you how to protect yourself, you know, to find a good one. That's crazy. What are the odds that you actually find someone that's actually working in your best interest? It shouldn't be that complicated. You shouldn't have to run the Russian roulette of having one good financial. Oh, thankfully I found a good one. You know, I found it. Like, what does it look like to put in the 20, maybe less hours of work that it should take to come up with a common sense investing strategy? For me, the light bulb went off with J.L. Collins and his index fund investing series, The Simple Path to Wealth, basically talking, why are we killing ourselves to try to beat the market and to get above market returns when the market just goes straight up over time? Maybe not over any 1 or 2 year window, but when you look at it over a period of time, it just goes up. And most hedge fund managers fail to keep up with the market over a 10-year period. You think you're really going to find the Edward Jones guy at the corner? That's going to be the guy? You know? So like, for someone to be able to break through the noise, say, whoa, that makes sense. I can see it. I don't need to beat the market. I just need to keep up with it. And if that's my mentality, I need to do it at the lowest cost possible. And now we're talking about fees, understanding the power of fees. Someone says, well, you know, my advisor only cost me like 2% a year, you know, like 2% over and fees, expense ratios over your investing lifetime. And this is a high number, even though it sounds small, that would cost you half of your portfolio. Like, that's $1 million mistake as opposed to having something with like a 10 basis points or four. And again, I understand that right now, if you haven't thought about money before, like that's all over your head. But it doesn't matter. You know, just saying like, holy crap, the rules are worth $1 million and I could probably put in about 10 hours of work, 10 hours of research. There's people that get bachelor's degrees, doctorate degrees. They're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and they have no financial plan. You could listen to 5 or 6 podcasts and have information that's worth $1 million over your investing lifetime. That's, I mean, it's powerful, man. And so once I saw that, yeah, I basically became an evangelist for it. Like, why doesn't everybody do this? This is crazy. Everybody needs to do this. So, but you know what? I'm still in debt. Like, this is the fun stuff, right? But when you got to clean, you got to clean up the debt first. And I know in your case, you were telling me $200,000+.
Yeah.
And even a less period of time, but I'm telling you, like, that's simple. It's understandable. I need to pay off the debt. I need to get my lifestyle under control while I do that.
But yeah, man, it's so basic. I always tell people, like, if you just want to pay off debt, it's the most simple thing you can do. Not
it's
saying
not
it's
fun.
Easy. Yeah, it's not
fun.
It's not easy. It's simple though.
Let me tell you my payoff debt story, just so we have some like clarity what not easy looks like. My job sucked. I mean, objectively, I didn't think it at the time. I remember thinking, this is kind of cool. I get my white coat on, you know, I'm the boss, I'm the manager here. This is kind of cool. It sucked. I was a customer service agent. Basically, I was spending all my time doing the equivalent of TPS reports in pharmacy, handling Medicare adjustment forms, dealing with, you know, patients whose insurance and doctors, and they just weren't talking to each other. And you're trying to fix it perpetually. You know, every single time you have one down, there's nine more waiting for you. There's no real time to like dwell on how awesome you are in this role. You're just trying to handle insurance all day long. And there's no consistency of schedule. Your nights, your weekends, it was just crazy. It was crazy. It wasn't fun. And you're standing 12 hours at a time. So that'll make you irritable on top of that. And I had convinced myself that I at least was getting some level of fulfillment from this, but I'm paying off this debt in the process. And so what that looked like is, you know, I was making probably close to $120,000. The government takes 30 to 40% of it after taxes, right? And then you bring that home. And then of that, I'm now sending probably another 50, 60% just right back to the government to pay off my student loans. And, you know, you only get to do that every couple of weeks when your paycheck comes in. So in between, you're just trying to make it work. You'd get home after this 2-hour period. I'd start to feel like I had early onset of gout. You know, I could feel those crystals forming in my feet. I was like, it was horrible. And you'd get home and you'd have to decompress. I couldn't talk to my wife. I couldn't like hug my baby. I just needed to walk upstairs. But what I did, let me tell you, before I decompressed, I walked upstairs. We had this small office room. In this office room, I had a whiteboard on the wall. On the whiteboard, it was broken up into pay periods, 2-week pay periods, representing what I estimated to be the amount of time I would needed to pay off my student loans. 4 years for $168,000. It was 100 checkboxes. Each checkbox represents a 2-week pay period of time. And the first thing I did at the end of this Sunday night where I'm finishing this shift, where I've just been standing on my feet for 10 hours, instead of hugging my wife and asking her about her day, I just would walk upstairs, just check one of the boxes. <You know? laughs> And so that's not easy. You can't gloss by that, but like, there's no regrets about this because everything that we're talking about going forward was predicated on the fact that instead of stuff, we bought our freedom.
Yeah, 100%. I actually have, and I left it hanging up on my door. I made a chart in Excel, and each square represented like, I think it was $250 or something like that. So I went at it so I would get more of that instant gratification because I could color in a lot of squares. Yep. So like every time I would transfer money to either like paying off the car or the credit card or the student loans or the mortgage. Like I would go up there and I would like color in a ton of squares and it was just super gratifying. It also gave you something to see progress that you were making.
So let's talk about how financial independence ties into this, right? So I'm getting clear. I'm feeling the momentum, you know, like when it started, I was accruing $30+ in interest a day. I remember that. And then it like goes down and you're getting closer and I'm feeling the momentum. And I'm starting to think about like what is next for my life. And obviously I've just talked about some of these big ideas of financial independence, but the game plan was that I was just going to pursue, I was going to maintain a really high savings rate. And I was going, if I had been saving 60% of my income, you know, to send off to student loans, I don't have student loans anymore. So now I'll just save for my financial independence. Now, financial independence, getting to the point where working is optional, but you can get more specific than that for your audience. We consider you're financially independent when you have reached 25 times your annual living expenses in an investment vehicle. Now, if you have real estate or some other passive income that's coming in the background, you can do a little math to subtract that. But at its core, if you're going just on investment assets, if you have 25 times your annual expenses saved in an investment vehicle, you have reached financial independence. So practically for an individual, just for simple, let's just use simple math. If your life cost $40,000 a year, you would multiply that times 25 and you need $1 million. If you double that to my life costs $80,000 a year. So it's not saying you have to live on 10,000 or 20,000 or 30. It's just a function of the math. If your life costs $80,000 a year, you need $2 million. Now, where does that come from? What's amazing about this is if you can, if you're saving, if you're paycheck to paycheck at its most simple level, if you're paycheck to paycheck, you're financing the difference with credit cards, it should be obvious. You can never retire, right? Because you need your paycheck to cover your minimum balance on your credit card to get to the next paycheck. If you're saving 1% of your income, then that means that every 99 years you work, you could afford to take a year off. We could scale that up. If you're saving 25%, this is typically considered an aggressive savings plan. Every 3 years you work, you can afford to take 1 year off. But 50%, let's talk about 50% for a second. You remember what I was talking about, how much I was throwing at my student loans. If you're saving 50% of your income, then that means every single year you work at its most basic level, you can afford to take a year off. And that's pretty cool, right? I mean, that's 1-to-1. That makes sense at its most basic level. You don't even really need math for that. Now, if you take that savings, that 50% savings rate, and you throw that into investment vehicles, common sense investment vehicles that are able to keep up with the market over intermediate periods of time, then you're going to get to that number within 10 to 15 years, depending on market returns. And that's the crazy thing about this is, so while so many things you hear about in life are marketed effectively as get rich quick schemes. Hey, you screwed all this up, but you can solve it in 1 week taking my funnel. And we know how that story ends. Every single time ends up with you bitter, your money in someone else's pocket. You're a little pissed off about it, a little bit on tilt, looking for the next thing. You just moved over here. Well, that didn't work. But this is a little different. It's get rich quickish, right? It's based on an intermediate time period. And you can get rich quickish every single time because it's just simple math. There's no secret, there's rules. And if you don't know the rules, you're definitely not winning.
What are some of those core like fundamental rules to getting this? I know part of it is the amount that you're saving, right?
We did something called the pillars of financial independence. It was a little clickbaity. I'm going to acknowledge it up front. But the idea was, when we looked at what our community did, we could extract from them principles. Everybody has different walk in life. They have different struggles, different like tools that they've been handed, gifts, and also baggage in many cases, right? But when you saw the people that had outperformed and gotten ahead, you could really start to see the patterns and you realize, okay, this is replicable. So control what you can control. First and foremost, you need to know what your expenses are, right? So we talked about how I had the savings rate. I only know what my savings rate was because I tracked my expenses. Many people have no idea. And so we just spend up to what we have. And then when the credit card is maxed out, then we know it's probably went too far. I should probably do better next time. That doesn't work. You have to be intentional about this. So knowing how much your life cost is a key to this whole process. And then once you know where your money's going, you can then redirect, tell it where to go. So that's kind of like baseline. Two is we can control our taxes, right? And to many degree, I told you about how when I was paying off my student loan debt, it cost me, like I was having to pay the government 30 to 40% in order to get that money back home so that I could then pay off my student loan debt. That's the problem with having debt, having this baggage. If there's no way to get around student loan debt, you just got to pay it off, right? So with that out of the way, that money that I was putting towards student loans, I can now be filling up all of those pre-tax buckets. So in the United States, at least, we have the 401k. If you're self-employed, you could have a solo 401k, SEP IRA. There's a few equivalents. But basically, instead of the government taking 20, 30, 40%, depending on your marginal tax bracket, and then you getting to spend it, you just fill up those buckets as much as you can. So you shelter it, you control your tax weight, prevent the government from ever seeing that money, totally illegal, allow that money to grow on your behalf, and then you can draw down on that money in the future when you're actually controlling your income. Because at some point in time, if you're not working for a paycheck, you're actually deciding how much you make, right? This year, I want to make this amount. This year, I want to make that amount. And that gives you a lot of flexibility with what tax rate you actually pay. HSAs are another example. Now, if you move down this list, kind of starting with taxes, I think there's three things that all of us need to kind of take stock of. If you were to think about your budget as a pie chart, and on that pie chart, 50% of that pie chart is going to be focused on your housing, your food, and your transportation. Universally across the board, until you make it into some absurdly high income bracket, that's where 50% of your life is going. So we could talk about the lattes, or we could bundle that under food. Or we could look at where 50% of your income is actually going. And so in our example, and actually even a better case than my co-host Brad's example, those three things were massive for him. So let's play this out. housing. He lives in an upper middle class neighborhood, but certainly not the largest house that they could afford. And they stayed there for 13 years. So they, you know, you could go run a mortgage calculator, see how much house you can afford, and you'll probably choke up the vomit on how much they will lend you. You don't have to borrow all of that.
I was just talking to somebody this weekend. I was like, thank God I didn't take as much money as they said I could take.
Right. Where does that number even come from? All right, so that's one. You know, figure out what a reasonable amount for you is. And maybe that's 25, 30% of your take-home pay, something like that. But like, you do not have to spend everything they will lend to you. Two, cars. Cars are not a status symbol if you're pursuing financial independence. So many of us get our identity from their car. You know, what we're saving for is the ultimate luxury, your freedom, your autonomy. And so many of us feel that we can just manage the payments. And because we can afford or manage the payments, we'll have payments forever. And that will always ensure that we have our status symbol, which, by the way, is empty 90% of the time, while you're at a job that, in my case, many cases, you loathe or barely tolerate. You know, that
but,
is a
but you need it to afford that car that's sitting in the parking lot.
You need it to afford that. Exactly. Thank you for making that thread. So it's that doesn't make sense to show you, like, well, does it really make a difference? We ran some math on this, some pretty significant math on this. And my co-host Brad is the perfect case study for this. In 2003, he bought a brand new Honda Civic. Now, that is a modest new car. But in this example, and what he did is he calculated it two ways. In one example, every 5 years, he upgrades the car. Now, that's pretty common. It's time for a new car. You just get the new car. You know, you buy a new car every 5 years. We'll always have a car payment. Now, what he did instead, and this is the calculation he ran, I'm going to buy one new car, and I'm going to pick a car that I know will last forever. You know, we know what those cars are. It's probably not the Range Rover. It's not the, maybe Lexus. But the Honda Civics, the Toyota Camrys, the cars that do what they need to do, transport you from A to B. I'm going to buy one of these cars that drives forever. I'm going to drive it for 15 years before replacing it. I need a car that will last for 15 years. So for 5 years, I will bank on having a car payment of $300 a month. And for the remaining 10 years, I will not. And I will invest the difference. If you run that over your investing lifetime, that's 45 years. So 50, that's three cars, one car every 15 years. The difference between the first case I laid out, $300 a month for 45 years, and the other case, whereas I'm going to still buy a new car, but I'm going to buy one that I'm okay driving for 15 years before replacing it. You just make that simple choice. That single decision is worth $750,000. I mean, just $750,000 $1 million right there. I mean, that's massive. And it's huge. So many people say, well, I'll never be a millionaire. But they've had a car payment their entire life. And right now they're looking at their car saying, well, this doesn't really bring me joy. I think I need to start looking for a new one. You know, like, come on, you got to know the rules, people.
I think it's a good point. And, you know, again, this weekend, when I was talking to this guy, the topic came up where I was saying to him, because I did a similar thing. I had before I got into this, I drove a 2017 Nissan 370Z, like nice little two-door sports car, paid like $40,000 for it. Or I shouldn't say I had a lease for $40,000. So when I got into all this, I obviously got rid of that. And I bought a 2012 Honda Civic with 18,000 miles, and I knew it would last me forever, right?
Forever.
Paid cash for it. Like, I don't want a car payment. Like, let me get this I want to own it. And I was talking to him about the whole status thing, right? I don't care. I don't give a crap what anybody thinks about it me anymore. Like, and I used to. So I haven't always been like this. I used to be that person where I got my status from my possessions, right? So I felt I still kind of miss driving that car because I did feel pretty damn cool in it, right? It was fun to drive, but that's not a part of my identity anymore. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of people have to get over is, you know, being so wrapped up in consumerism and tying their identity to their belongings and only feeling like worthy and accepted if they have the things that society says we should have.
Yeah, there's so much baked into that, Ryan. I think that a lot of this goes to, like, what are your goals? If you don't have any goals other than to just have stuff, it's probably time to, like, find some goals that get you excited, right? Find something that is more exciting than stuff. So for me, it's being able to design my life, you know, to have this privilege where I can build, and we'll talk kind of about my story arc, my journey, but just I've been able to design this life. And if I look back at some of these same pillars, some of these same principles that we've leaned on, you know, we could go, item by item through all the pillars of FI. We've actually done whole episodes on that. So, but I just want to point out like these small things make a difference. So food is another one. Food is like the black hole in many people's budget, right? I mean, it's just where all the rest, the extra money goes. And if you add into that your home supplies, your entertainment budget, your alcohol budget, like all these different things, I mean, you could gobble up $2,000 in this thing.
Yeah.
So what does it look like to put some constraints around that? Again, how does this make a difference? Every $100 a month, we call it the aggregation of marginal gains. And this is actually taken from, it was the British cycling coach. He basically transformed Britain's cycling team to a world-class team. And when they asked him, how did you do this? He said, well, I had the athletes bring their pillow from home and sleep on it. And it was, you know, kind of a joke, but really it was a metaphor, if I'm using that correctly. I know I'm not using it correctly, but basically what it was saying is it's a symbol of all the small choices that they made that by themselves look inconsequential, but in aggregate, you can see the pattern. You could see that these two individuals went in a fork in a road. So looking at your life through this optimization framework, every $100 a month in recurring expenses that you're able to cut from your budget is $30,000 less that you don't need to reach financial independence, right? So these small little choices, you go from everything from like, are we still paying, you know, $200 a month for a cable package that we never watch? Or in the worst case scenario, we say there's nothing on. Or on top of that, we say, like, how am I paying this much for the sports package and I still don't have the game? Right? You know, we've been there.
That's awesome, man. So what episodes, if you know them off the top of your head, are these pillar episodes?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So episode 100 is kind of like our gateway to our content, much of which we've just talked about. It's our why. And we have a few of the pillars baked into that. Episode 21 is when he kind of went through these 10 items to break down, you know, the 10 patterns that we see for people that really have crushed this. And that kind of, you know, that's kind of the heart of this. Like, it's an equation, but really it's a philosophy. As you said, like, if you're still getting your identity from your stuff, this is going to be tough. So you have to think about this more as a worldview. You have to replace stuff with goals, something that lights you up and something that lights you up for yourself and for your family. That's what, for me, financial independence, you know, this path is about way more than just 25 times my annual expenses. Because that's down the road, right? When you reach that number, that's going to be down the road. In the meantime, how do you get those benefits now? And I would say in my case, I feel like I've gotten that. It actually ties to my story in that I paid off the debt. I'm saving a significant percentage of my income. I have not reached financial independence at this point in time. And I am in this situation where the podcast that, you know, my podcast, Choose a Vi, it's blowing up. It's starting to get a lot of downloads. It's taking a much more time than it did when I started, and it was a small passion project. We actually have a documentary that wants to come film with us, and I'm due to go visit my wife's family. She's from Zimbabwe, so that's one of these trips you can't take with 1 or 2 days of turnaround. It's more like a 1 to 2 week trip. And then third, we have a conference in our niche that we were going to, and I work in corporate America, dude. You don't get time like that in corporate America. You get 20 days a year, and you don't get to take it all off at the same time.
Yeah, I only got 2 weeks, so you got more than I did.
But I couldn't use it. You know, you can only have it when no one else wanted. Look at me. I've only been in the job a few years. You don't get that seniority, my friend. You haven't earned that. So I went to my boss, and I kind of laid out my heart here. You know, I said, these are all the things that are going on in my personal life. And, you know, the pharmacy is in great shape. I've got a great team that's supporting the efforts. We could easily bring someone then to cover it. I would like to request, and I've gone into our corporate policies and seen that this is something I can get approval for. I would like an unpaid family leave of absence, for 3 weeks while I go sort all this stuff, and then I'll be back to take care of it. My boss looks at me and says, I don't think it's in the company's best interest for us to let you do that.
What does that mean?
Did you not hear how compelling my case was? Like, did you not listen to what I just said? All right. So, but my boss didn't have all the information. He didn't really know, you know, where I was on this financial game plan. In his mind, he saw, all right, got this young pharmacist just out of college. I know he's got 6 figures of student loan debt. He needs this. What he didn't know is that I paid off all my debt in like 4 years. I had saved 60 to 70% of my income. I had several years of expenses saved up. And I'd started a small passion project, a small hustle, right? And it had started to produce some level of income. Now, it was not replacing my income. You know, it wasn't replacing my income. That's a stretch. But at this point in time, it had come close to covering all my expenses. And I was leaning into it part-time. This is a pretty low-risk scenario. I was doing it nights and weekends when I wasn't working. And I could see, if I could lean into this, you know, this will work. So I just looked at my boss and said, I don't think it's in my best interest to stay. You know, and that's what you get to. And my boss was on tilt. You know, he like wound backwards. And that was my excuse to jump. And let me tell you, I've always thought of entrepreneurship's crazy. Why would anybody do entrepreneurship? Everybody knows that businesses fail. Like, I don't want to have a business that fails. And maybe that's the case when you have to come up with a business plan, when you have to take out significant debt, when you have to go get a brick and mortar building, when you have to go get all these, you know, when it's that heavyweight as opposed to lightweight, right? When we're talking about a hustle, when we're talking about a side hustle, when we're talking about a passion project and we're talking about doing it with relatively low cost, you know, a couple thousand dollars, there's really no downside. Yeah. You know, like if it didn't take off, the worst that I lost was just my time. Yep. And I didn't have, and I was being fiscally responsible. I had a plan for my family because you can always go back.
Yeah, that's a big point. You can all like I had to, you know, it's only been a month and a half, not almost 2 months since I made the jump. And that was something I had to always like tell myself, right? Because it's no matter like how well positioned you are, it's still like nerve wracking, especially like I was in the corporate world for like 9 years, so almost 10 years. So like you get used to like that, you know, quote unquote safety and comfort and all that stuff. So to make that jump, it's not super easy. So I had to like tell myself things like that as well. Like yeah. You can always go back. And it's true. You can like,
it's true. It's not a lie. Yeah. You can go back. Yeah. I wasn't burnt. Let me stress that this is not me burning the bridges with my boss. Right. This was me realizing that I value myself and my family and my business more than I value the corporation's goals at this particular point in time. And that's fine. We amicably parted ways. But you don't get to do that if you don't have financial stability. You don't get to do that if you're paycheck to paycheck, if you're burdened under student loan debt. I'm still not a go out and burn the boats entrepreneur. I never will be. Maybe there's individuals that I have to make this work because I don't have a choice. I'm a chicken entrepreneur. It's amazing. It gives those of us hope that don't automatically aren't born with this kind of like, I'm going to nuke everything, you know, worldview.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm really very cool. Risk adverse as well. Like risk I was like, adverse. Yeah, like how can I make this as least, because I think about it from like a stress standpoint as well. Mm-hmm. Like if there's a lot of risk involved, I mean, for me, there's a lot of stress involved as well. And I don't perform as well when there's a lot of stress on me. So it's like, nice. How can I make this as like risk-free as possible? And to your point, like paying off all your debt is a big piece of that and moving towards that that financial independence. But I want to ask you so at the point of you leaving your job, you didn't have how you defined it, financial independence. Mm. It didn't sound like. So how, because I've been in the community for a bit and there's some interesting, people have some pretty strong opinions on things like in most communities. And I feel like that some people might have frowned upon you making that move, right? In the like the normal person in like the financial independence community, for you making that jump before you had attained that definition that we described earlier.
Well, shame on them.
Would you? I mean, do you get where I'm coming from, though? Like,
not particularly. All right. Well, so I don't. I mean, I'm sure maybe somebody did, but I guess if that's the case, then that's where I'm taking my stand, right? If that is the case, so I think that.
How did you rationalize that in your head? Like, okay, I'm not there yet, but I really want to do.
So this. It depends on two things. Are we talking about Jonathan, the head of the Chooseify, or the co-founder of the Chooseify podcast, talking to people about financial independence as someone that has not yet reached financial independence, because that would be like imposter syndrome, which is like a very valid thing to talk about. And I love that conversation. Or two, like, was it safe for me to leave my job if I hadn't done that? I don't think anybody thinks that.
I mean, I'm thinking about it like you had this goal, right? You had this goal that you wanted to reach financial independence. You knew what the metric was to get there, but you took this risk by, right? Because when you had your job, what I'm getting at is when you had your job, you had a, like the math was there, right? You knew exactly how you were getting to reach your goal, right? Whether you enjoyed it or not, like the math was there. And you went this other route, which was a little bit less risky. So how did you do that in your head? Like, how did you talk yourself through that?
Well, I was very comfortable with it. I think what you have to look at this is a choose your own adventure. That's what I'm talking about. So for me, financial independence is a choose your own adventure. Now there's three basic paths that everybody is subject to reach financial independence. You're going to get there on one of three ways. You're going to save a significant portion of your income in your regular job. And you're going to invest in like just the stock market, investment vehicles, low-cost broad-based index funds in my case. Two, you're going to use maybe either leverage or unleveraged real estate. So you're going to invest in real estate. Or three, you're going to start a business and you're going to create some level of passive income flow for those. So that's the framework. That's what we have to choose from. Financial independence does not say you only have to invest in broad-based index funds. Financial independence is not just for real estate. Financial independence is not just for business building. It's just saying that everybody that has reached it, and I would challenge you to prove me wrong, you know, other than like a silver spoon or inheritance, has followed one of those three paths. And there's advantages and disadvantages to each, and you need to kind of know your own inclination. So path one, which was my path as a pharmacist. So I looked at pharmacists around me and they were like 50 years old and up, and they were still working in intolerable, unsafe conditions because they had no other choice. And I was like, nope, not doing that. So what am I going to do? My original plan was I'm going to save 50 to 60% of my income. I'm going to invest that in low-cost broad-based index funds over time. And I expect within 10 to 15 years to be able to reevaluate whether or not I enjoy this. If I don't, I will move on to greener pastures, but I don't need this anymore. That's plan one. The great thing is you're never locked into one of these decisions. Every single like week as you end up paying down your debt, as you end up saving more, you have more power as we saw. Option two, real estate. Real estate terrifies me. People love it. A lot of people love it. It terrifies me. I have no inclination for it. It's not passive. It's a part-time job. It can get there if you're able to build a team, treat it like a business. You can slowly make it more passive, but it's a pretty significant learning curve. There's a lot of ways for money just to disappear. And yeah, I just don't, it's not my inclination, but it's not ruled out. There's plenty of people in the financial independence community that have crush the game. I'm open to it. I don't think that I'm going to go all in on it as my path to FI. I could see myself reaching back to diversify or to try it, but do it from a place where I feel more confident and like less is riding on me getting it right the first time. That's just kind of where I'm at. And then three, business building. So the cool thing about real estate is you can use leverage, right, with real estate in a pretty significant way. You can use leverage in the stock market. It's called like margin loans, but like nobody's out there saying you should do this. And I'm certainly not. Real estate's a pretty cool way that you can use leverage. But as we saw in 2008,
and when you say leverage, just to be clear, you mean taping out some type of debt to maybe
purchase So let's say that we're talking about a house that's $400,000, $400,000 house. If you were trying to buy $400,000 in the stock market so that you could make an 8% return on that, you'd need to bring $400,000 to the table. If you wanted to do that in real estate, you could potentially go out and get a loan for, you know, some 300 odd thousand of it, you know, bring a significant down payment in or maybe even less. And then you could bring the cash flow based on renting that property out. So you're able to take advantage of leverage. But leverage cuts both ways in that if that house craters, like the economy craters and the market goes down, you know, everything goes down, that can work against you. We saw certain people that got into really expensive houses with nothing down, had no skin in the game, were basically banking on appreciation, the house being worth more a year from now than it is now. And, you know, so it's just to say that that's more complex than we need to go for today. But real estate, that's where you can use leverage. Business building is one of the most miraculous things ever in that it's as far from passive as you can get. There's a show that I think probably all of us have listened to that's fun, the Smart Passive Income podcast with Pat Flynn, right? I think Pat knows that there's nothing about his business model that's passive. Right. He has disconnected his time from his money, which is fantastic, but business building is not passive, ever. I mean, right. You can graduate yourself out, you can sell it, you can build something that at some point you sell off. What's cool about it though, even though nobody's really making the claim that it's truly passive, is that one, it could separate your time for your money. So I earn money when I'm sleeping. I earn money when I'm on vacation. I work 80 hours a week for myself to avoid working 40 for somebody else. But you know, like the way that I earn income is no longer tied to that, to directly one-to-one to the hours I put in. That's amazing. But part two is even cooler in that with business building, you can build equity out of thin air. Your business might choose if I was worth nothing when I started it. And now it's worth a significant amount. Where did that come from? It wasn't me directly putting my money. It's worth more because of what it is, right? You can create an incredible vehicle for yourself out of thin air. There's nothing like that. So the cool thing is, instead of looking at it, so like to your earlier point, do you feel like you lost the script when you, or you betrayed somebody when you, and that wasn't exactly your word, so I'm having trouble verbalizing, but I'm just playing through kind of that thing. Did you go off script when you started business? No, because financial independence isn't binary. It's not zero or you're there. It's a continuum. And if you're on this path, every single week or month that you're on it, you get more power and you get to pick and choose based on your inclinations, what's opening up in your life. And basically what I look at it as, and I heard this from Scott Trench from Bigger Pockets, it's just an incredible principle. You are increasing the odds of success every week. You're opening yourself up. You're creating your own luck, right? Luck's one of those things like, wow, he's lucky. Well, maybe. Or maybe they've just created a life for themselves where when the inevitable opportunities land, their head isn't tucked down in some corporation's goals. They can actually see them and grab at them and go for it. And so, yes, my plan was this. I'm going to pay off my debt and then I'm going to take 10, 15 years and I'm going to save that. But then I saw an opportunity, not a risk, but an opportunity. And I jumped at it. And I think actually for me, that's if I feel like I've added anything to the dialogue in the financial independence community, it's exactly that. That this is a choose your own adventure that gives you options. And it's not all the benefits of financial independence are not reserved for those individuals that have managed to save up 25X. We talk about it in the context of something called FU money. And we'll just say, you know, Freedom Unlimited for right now. But FU money basically says when you have a couple years of expenses saved up, when you're on this path and you've been on this path for just even a little bit, you get to tell your boss, hey, I think I want to rework our working conditions. I want to work remote. I think I want to go ahead and take some time off. Hey, I'd like to, you know, you get to make what would seem and maybe currently seem in your company like unreasonable requests, but you have the power.
Right, the leverage shifts.
You can He-Man this thing. You know, you can feel it. And the sooner you can internalize that, they don't know your bank account. They're not seeing your numbers, but you know with that. And you've been able to frame your kind of SWOT analysis, your opportunities, your strategies, what all you could, how you want to leverage it. And as soon as you realize that you have options, you can just do what you want. That's the cool thing. I remember as a pharmacist, brand new grad, and I was looking at, people were saying, you need to go. And I thought to myself, I don't feel like I can negotiate. I don't think I can. And I think I was right because you didn't have any power. You're six figures of student loan debt. Pharmacists at the time were even then were a dime a dozen. They were swapping them out like they're going out of style. And like, I needed the job. I didn't want to be the troublemaker. But would I negotiate for myself now? Yeah. Yeah, in a heartbeat I would. And not because you reach financial independence, but because you know your value. And you don't let that sort of thing slide. You have options. Create options for yourself. Mm-hmm. And regardless of whether or not you hustle and grit, regardless of whether or not you end up grinding it out, you're going to start dictating the terms.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I appreciate you diving into that a bit. Because like when I explain like financial independence to people and like you can retire early, people are often like, what are you going to do when you retire early?
Let's talk about that. Maybe that was the heart of the question. I think, are you retired? Like, I don't think in this context, I've really ever said retirement is not a goal for me. It's not. I think there is some shock value to it. I think the media has latched onto it and it's probably been good for the overall concept for people to say that you could, you fiscally could, but I literally don't know anybody whose goal it is to just work on their golf game and drink pina coladas on the beach. I mean, that sounds fantastic for about 7 days.
Yeah.
That's about the maximum amount of time that would hold personal appeal for me. So I think while that it may be useful to talk about what it would look like to be able to do that, the goal for me is to have more options in my life. So financial independence, getting to the point where working is optional. There is no downside to having more options in your life.
Yep. Yeah. I always tell, like when I explain it to people and I tell them about my story, like my goal, like when I had my kind of big aha moment, it was like when I went on a solo trip to Africa and like I like met these people in Zanzibar. And they were like traveling the world full time and they were doing like they had online businesses. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that, but I want to be able to have the choice to do that if I want to.
I want to be able to choose not to.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I want it to be like, that's cool. But, you know, I think I want to go do this instead. I wanted to have that ability and that freedom. And at the time, I was just so far away from it until I found like a community like what you guys have built with Choose FI. So I kind of want to dive into that real quick. And just because this is a business podcast, I'd like to talk about like the business side of your podcast. And like, when did you guys see that, oh man, like this has some serious potential here? Because on the surface, when a lot of people don't understand the business of podcasting, they don't realize there could be a business there. I guess that's the simple way to put it. So how did you guys start to have that realization?
Yeah, this is interesting. So, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, the financial independence space, just because that's the niche that we're in. Personal finance, I guess it would be another way of framing it. But you have to pull, I think I would love for your audience listening to this to try in their minds to disassociate the actual niche that we're in and insert wherever, whatever space they want to get into. You know, whether that be health and fitness, whether or not it be real estate or entrepreneurship, whatever that is for you, you know, do your best to try to not get too fixated on you know, my actual niche. So starting out, I knew I wanted to do a podcast just as a way of having the conversation that we just had now. And even more than that, I think if I had known more, I think one of my goals would be to have the types of conversations that a podcast gets you access to. Podcast gets you remarkable access to individuals that have incredible insight and can, you get to ask your questions. I mean, that's an unreal privilege. So that's really, really cool at the beginning. Now, when we were starting out, there were two things that we wanted to do that I remember me and Brad having this conversation. We were trying to, one, who was one or two steps ahead of us? Who had done something similar that whose voice we could see it kind of matched up with ours and had kind of built like a roadmap for what it was that we wanted to accomplish? And then two, I said voice, what is your actual voice? Like, who are we? Now this kind of goes to shows that you resonate with, but it also is more like all of us have this unique way of interacting with the world. And there's a tendency to find someone that you like and then just try to just do that. But if that doesn't mesh with who you are, then the authenticity will be lost. Now, for instance, let me give you some words that will help frame that. Are you a teacher? Are you a coach? Are you a guru? Are you just a relatable guy? You know, are you a hype man? Are you an empathetic ear? Are you a listener? Like, how is it that you normally would be interacting with people, and then figure out who that is? And you can be a combination of different voices, but just knowing that there are different ways of it. Like Gary Vee is a hype man, right? Like, man, that dude's on. But there are other people that are very, very empathetic ears. And there's people that are academics, that are teachers, that are helping you work through stuff. None of these voices, all these voices excel in different ways. None of these voices is objectively better than the other. But knowing like who you are in a vacuum can help inform who you're going to be. And it doesn't really matter so much for one show or two shows, but if you're going to be doing this over time and you keep switching voices all the time, right? It's your audience is going to be confused, right? They're not going to follow you. So those were our two things. And that was a really big epiphany for me. So for me, I'm a little bit more of a motivator, a hype person. Brad is a little bit more empathetic. So by basically identifying, you know, the listener, the empathetic ear, and someone that is a little bit more on the hype side, a little bit more of a personal motivator, then that gave us space to own that space and then interact authentically over time and develop those personalities, right? And that's been pretty cool because it allows you to engage people with different ways, but do it in a very authentic way. That was one. Two, figuring out what do you like, what do you not like? Go look at any podcast, any niche. And the cool thing is it really, and even in a perfect world, it isn't your niche at all. It's a completely different niche. And identify the elements about different shows that you like. What is it about the show that captivates you? Is it the fact that they take something that's very complex and they break it down? Is it the fact that they bring in the community? Think about the elements of your show that to you make the best listening experience. So for us, thinking this through, I really like the Bigger Pockets podcast, how it was two guys bouncing these ideas with a little bit of rapport. I really liked America's Test Kitchen, where it was like, hey, we try it all so you don't have to. And then here's the best way. And Kimball's a little bit goofy, a little bit self-deprecating, you know, but he's going to break down this and it's going to be, you're going to get it by the end. I really like Dave Ramsey. So, you know, he's a motivator. He's not willing to tell you when you're being an idiot about something. He brings in the community constantly. So like you can see, like I made a mesh of those. I kind of formed this little mesh for our show that kind of helped me form what it was that I wanted to do, what we wanted to do. So that was kind of like the identity of the show. And certainly you get better over time. Two, when I really dive into what for me makes something that is perpetual, right, that isn't just a flash in the pan. When I think about, let's look at Dave Ramsey specifically. This is an individual that has had a podcast basically just telling people how to get out of debt and not much more. You know, like, I mean, I know he does more, but at its core, it's how do you get out of debt, and has made that work for 20 years. 20 years he's gotten out of here's how you get out of debt. Baby steps 1 through 3, boom, done. All right, next caller. Like, that's unreal. How is that even possible? So how is it possible? It's because he brings in his community, right? I was talking to a fellow recently and he was telling me he still listened to Dave Ramsey. And this is a guy that's financially independent. I mean, he doesn't need to work anymore. And I was like, do you still get value? Like, why do you still get value, you know, listening to how to get out of debt? You don't have any debt. And he's like, you know, Jonathan, I just love hearing people winning. Like, that's it. That's perpetual right there. So I could break myself trying to figure out how to reinvent the wheel, how to every single week have the latest and greatest content, how to always have something new that no one has ever heard of before. And at some point it'll go off the rails and I'll go into something that's actually a scam by accident. Like, oh, I'm sorry, Mulligan, my bad, you know? Or I could just take the heartbeat of this, which is like, while the principles are the same, the individuals that have used this with the success are always unique. Always unique. But to hear them implement and take action on it, that is winning. And to be able to highlight that. So that helped form, like, this is not the Brad and Jonathan show. We may facilitate the platform, but this is a platform for our community. That's just kind of a couple of examples. A few other things you have to do is you have to get out of your own way when it comes to your weaknesses. So if you can't reframe your weakness as a strength, then at least think about it as an opportunity. So if what's an example of that? So all of us would like to have the biggest podcast in the world, right? All right. So let's just look at the biggest podcast in the world. It's like maybe the Joe Rogan Experience, millions of people listen to every episode. All right. So what possible advantage could you have over a Joe Rogan, right? Or opportunity could you have? Joe Rogan, by virtue of the fact that he has millions of people that listen to every single episode, he can't possibly be on a first name basis with all of them. He just can't. It just doesn't work that way. You only have 5 people to listen to every show. You can't even get your mom to listen, but you got 5 people that are listening. You can be on a first name basis with every single one of them. And what does that mean is you can craft and curate your content directly for them by name. This is for you. You can serve them where they are. Now, there's a great article out there by Kevin Kelly called 1,000 True Fans. Without breaking down the entire article, the TLDR here, which is more than sufficient, is that if you have a thousand, not a million, not 100,000, if you have 1,000 true fans, then anything that you pursue in this life will be a success. You will be able to feed your family for life. Now, there's no reason that you can't grow that past 1,000, but it's like, instead of you breaking yourself to say, well, I'm never going to have a million people listen to my podcast, I'm never going to have 40,000 downloads an episode, I'm never going to, what does it look like to improve the lives of 1,000 people so much that they're grateful and they refer you to a friend and family member, that when you publish a book, they buy it. When you do anything new, they promote it for you. It probably starts with knowing where they are and creating impact that serves them directly where they are. Well, how do you do that? Sorry, dude, I keep asking your questions for you. No, but this is it. This was the thought process, right? So how do you do that? To go there quickly, early on, we started a closed Facebook group. Facebook has plenty of problems. There's lots of reasons to be irritated or not like Facebook. But what Facebook does provide for you in an incredible way is a way to engage your audience directly. To put it in perspective, when we had early on, so when we started our Facebook group, immediately 1,000 people joined it that first day. And then from there, it just kind of grew. I think there's over 50,000 people in the Facebook group now. And when it started, though, just to kind of realize the value of this, we were, you know, maybe rightly so, irritated with some of the flaws, some of the things that Facebook did or did not do well. And we're like, whoa, it looks like just get this off Facebook and just create our own thing and do it. So we looked up a bunch of different platforms and we looked at Slack being one of them. A lot of our users had used it internally and were recommending it for us. So I priced it out for 4,000 people based on the volume of comments and messages that were happening every single month. Groups. It would have cost us $26,000 a month. just replicate what we are getting with Facebook for free. This is an amazing tool. Now, hear me on this. I am not talking about Facebook pages. I think Facebook pages are largely useless. I am not talking about Twitter. I think Twitter is basically a way for one podcaster or writer to talk to another. Like you're not interacting with your community. You're certainly not interacting with your 1,000 true fans. They are not there. Real people aren't there. I'm on there. I use it, but it's like a peer-to-peer thing, I guess. I don't know. But Facebook groups currently, that's where your audience is. And maybe there's more YouTube and some others, but Facebook groups are unbelievable. You can post your episode in there. You can find out their response to the episode. You can get their criticisms in there. You can use that to then do a better job with your content going forward, to create new content that serves, because this is what your audience is telling you every single day, the content that they're looking for, the places that they're struggling. And you can now build your show to serve them directly. Not everybody, because everybody's not listening to you yet. You're serving them. Right? And you can build that over time. And I think now I feel like we have ambassadors for our show. People, when someone has a question about personal finance, our audience invariably says, you know what? There was this fantastic episode. They actually talked about this exact thing. You should go listen to episode 21 of the podcast. I think that'd be great. And there's no reason for them not to, because we've created that show for them based on what they said they were struggling with. And what does that mean? It means that we on average get around 7% growth month over month, right? Now, 7% when you only have 5 downloads an episode isn't a lot, right? I mean, you're barely getting an extra download. But like when you compound that, it means that you're doubling in size every 6 or 7 months. There's a rule of 72. It's a little math term you can throw out there. You take 72, divide it by whatever percentage increase and you get, and that whatever comes out of that, that's how long it takes to double. So by the time that we got to, 500,000 downloads, a month, then that means that within 8 months later, now on average, 7% of our audience is telling a friend or family member about that. 8 months later, we are at 1 million downloads a month. And now you have an objectively big show. And as long as you don't betray that trust, you continue highlighting the stories of people that are winning, it'll happen again. There's no reason for it not to. And so there's a lot more there, but I think it's always like, I just want to highlight that this 1,000 true fans, highlighting on your core audience, who are you serving, that is scalable. Even though it sounds intimate, it's scalable. Because the people that you weren't calling out by name, you weren't addressing, they see a version of themselves in that person, right?
Yeah.
And that's what gets them, that's what has individuals saying, I will go to bat for you. I will do the highest thing, the best thing that I can do for you is I will recommend it to a friend or family member because I know, and this is a big deal, I will not regret that recommendation. There's nothing in your show that will make me look bad. Humans crave social proof, right? And I mean this just in the context of what we just said. I went to bat for Game of Thrones. I said, everybody needs to listen to Game of Thrones. This is incredible. What's going on here? And then the last season came out and I was angry. I will never recommend a TV show again until I have the finale, right? That's what this looks like. Don't tell your audience your one show and then betray them. Like for example, let's use politics since it's a hyper-partisan world right now. If you want to have a political show, you're going to cultivate a political audience. And that is amazing. It's fine. I'm sure there's plenty of room for that. If you are a non-political show, you're catering to both sides of the aisle and you're bringing people in under a common theme. And that's why you're there. And you've created a large audience. And then you suddenly go in on a rant, one day or consistently start throwing in barbs. People are confused. Like, wait a second. What is this? Know your audience, serve your audience, be true to what it is that you communicate. If I wanted to start a political show, I'll start a political show. I'm not going to taint, right? I'm not going to taint my precious platform with this, like something that I know why people are here and they're not here to hear my view on politics. They're not.
For sure. So
that's just an example.
More than
don't betray their trust. When someone is recommending you, this is the most valuable thing they can do for you. And they're doing it based on what they think they know your show is.
What monetization model did you guys put in place? Because even you said early on, earlier in this interview, you said that, before you even left your job, the podcast was making some money. So how did you guys put a monetization model? And it also sounded like you said you modeled what some other people were doing. Is that correct as well for how you guys decided to help it generate revenue?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. So let's see. I'm pulling up. We did an episode on this where we talked about, you know, kind of the different frameworks. I'd say there's probably like 7 or 8 ways to make money online just generally. Podcasting, if you just think about it at its core, it seems kind of limiting. Oh, I have a podcast, so people listen to the podcast, so I can just do like ads, right? If I run ads, then I get this. So that's not true. There's plenty of ways to make money online. And I think the way to look at the podcast is nothing builds trust with your audience more than a podcast. It is the single most intimate experience that is out there, you know, maybe even more so than a book, but certainly more than YouTube. So let's just play what this looks like practically. When you're watching YouTube, you're usually, it's mercenary. You are going in, you're trying to get a question answered and you're getting out. At least that's how I interact with YouTube. Or you're doing it while you're multitasking. It's on the side screen while you're working or something along those lines. You're giving it 30% of your attention. Books are the only, like, you can only read a book, right? Podcast is like your escape, right? When you have a podcast or a radio show, you're listening to it on your commute to and from work. You're listening to it while you're working out. Like you are escaping to this. And as a result, you have 90% of someone's attention. And so with that in mind, the most obvious model is ads. We kind of work through what our options are. And then based on what we were doing at the time, we picked one. So if your options are basically, you could do ads, you could do affiliate marketing, you could do ads, you could, and if you have a podcast, by the way, you're kind of stuck there unless you then create a product or you create some sort of SaaS or something else that you're referring, like that's kind of it. So one thing we realized is that while there are plenty of great podcasts and there are plenty of great websites, there were very few podcasts that actually had great websites, right? And so I think many people, when they start, kind of depends on what your goals are, but if you want to build a business around your podcast, I would say you need to start with a website immediately. You need to build your email list immediately. Like, even if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to screw it up. Even if it's ugly, you know how I said they don't have great website? Even if it's ugly, you need to build something because you need to own your platform, have a place that you're sending people. You don't want to just send people to your Libsyn hosted page so they can see the show notes there. You don't want to just send people to Facebook or to YouTube because you're on someone else's platform. You don't own that in any way. So with a podcast, like, if we just had a podcast, we would have capped it there. But we build a website behind the podcast in order to give people a landing page where they could see the show notes, see various resources that we put together. And then that opened up everything that your traditional blog has, plus the intimacy that comes with a podcast, making everything on the website more potent, right? So put this in perspective. Once we went to the website model, our audience wanted to help us. They wanted to. If we made a recommendation, what we did is instead of dropping ads on the show, because I priced out the ads and then I compared that to the listening experience. And I was like, you know what? You could always go back and add ads if you want to, but it's just, I don't want to. And it kind of feels like having a boss too, and that you're reading copy and you're just, you know, it's just like, oh, I like when there's something that I get excited about, I want to talk about it. If I don't have anything that I want to talk about, I don't want to talk about it. I didn't want to force that level of script on myself if I could avoid it. So by having the website and thinking about my podcast as evergreen, so some people have the goal, if you're on the ad model, you want your audience to always be listening to the latest episode, because in an ad world, it's like $15 for CPM, which is $15 per 1,000 downloads. You can get, you know, 3 to 4 ads per episode, somewhere in that range. So, you know, if you had 4 ads and you had a podcast that was being listened to by 1,000 people, you'd make, you know, $40 to $60 for that episode, right? So it's okay. It's great. Not a ton. If you have 100,000 people, then obviously it's much better. You know, if you have 1 million people are listening to it, then that's a life-changing amount of money. And obviously it's a continuum. But you only get credit for the number of people that listen to that episode over like a 30 to 60 day window, depending on the contract. With affiliate marketing, what I was thinking is, instead of having like 1 million ads that we have access to and you're just kind of getting put in, let's just focus on like 5 or 6 that are totally in our niche that we know our audience already loves, that we love, that we use personally. And like, let's build their identity into ours. So like when you think of Choose FI and who Choose FI likes, you simultaneously think of this. And then let's make it super easy using short codes to point people back to our website where they can sign up for using our affiliate offer if they want to do that. So by having what we think of as this exclusive affiliates, and then pointing them back to our website, over time, you're asking your audience to buy into this idea. If you want to support us, like, we don't have any ads on the show, if you want to support us in what we're doing here at Choose FI, you know, here are 4 easy ways. And then you have those on your landing page. And what I think, I mean, I think objectively at this point, we've outperformed anything that we could have made on ad revenue. I mean, just you know, by a multiple. Because our audience goes into this, eyes wide open. Here's how I can help you guys. I want to help you guys. And what that has allowed us to do is have a super clean listening experience for probably 70, 80, 90% of our audience. And then probably like 10 to 20% of our audience is going in when they need a service that is represented by one of the ones that we talk about, they're going in to help us out. And that's been amazing. It's been win-win. So, you know, what's cool again is you can always go back if you want to do ad revenue. One thing that with ads as a smaller individual that's just trying to get your first seat at the table, a lot of ads, like a lot of contracts. I had this contract from this one company. I was thinking about it. I mean, I really was close a couple times. And I noticed in the fine print that they said they wanted this ad to be in the episode for life. Like they had the episode for life. I was like, I don't want to give you a seat at this table for life. Like that's like, you're paying me for a return for 30 to 60 days. What is this fine print down here? And I was like, you know what? No, just don't worry about that. And so that's kind of interesting. Like protect your content. Like don't sell, like, you know, does $60 change your life? Does $120 change your life? Does $1,000, you know, maybe $1,000 changes your life. But
you probably don't know
the most
this,
precious thing you have is the trust that your audience has with you. So
started,
it's probably not worth
space.
It for some bees pollen or some blinds or some
area that we live in
underwear.
And we tell all
think
pretty much
through,
the same
like,
thing to all of our clients.
How much is your platform
this
something
is,
that you've
anybody just getting
at,
in the podcast?
How much
the first
is that
thing
actually
they
worth?
And don't sell. They're like, well, how do I pay for the work that you guys are doing? How do I make this like a break even or profitable scenario? And then the first thing pops in their head is like ads. And we're like, no. Like the best thing that you can do is promote yourself. And what is so, because we're working with a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, things like this. So you're going to make way more money promoting yourself and your services and your products than you are pushing like Intel computer chips or the world's best fitting underwear, like you said.
Yes. And let me just say one more thing is that there's a reason that they're paying you this somewhat relatively low amount for this ad. It's like it's based on a low ROI. It's much more than it would be with a YouTube payout. I mean, podcasting convert a lot higher than YouTube, but it's still pretty low. Over time, so many businesses are retroactively trying to get a podcast to then support their business or create their brand. What if you have the luxury, the privilege of doing it the other way? You create this phenomenal brand. You create this environment that your fans, your audience loves to be in. You can also always go back and build the product. You can always go the other way with it. So I think just keeping that in mind, like as your audience grows, that's the other thing that is hard. We could go through the seven different ways to make money online and none of them will surprise people. You could have a mastermind class. You could have a course. You could have a physical product. You could have a software service. You could have ads. You could have affiliate. You know, the one thing that isn't calculated in all that is that your most precious product, the thing that you're really building is your brand. And the longer you play that out, the longer you sell that, before you sell that or monetize that, the more valuable it is. And so like I was blown away. So we just released our book. It's called Chooseify, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. I know you guys have videos. So I'll put it on here. And we just released this. And thousands of our audience went ahead and pre-ordered it for us ahead of the pre-order, right? To show their support, to show their interest and provide us feedback on it. Thousands and thousands. Every publisher in the world now, they don't want to take bets on unknown authors, right? They want authors with a built-in audience. Every TV show at this point is trying to find someone with a built-in audience. So we actually decided to self-publish, recognizing that most media houses are looking for someone with a built-in audience anyways. We already had the built-in audience. Do we really need the publishing house, right? Thinking about, again, what does it look like to bring the power to your side of the court? You know, thinking about first, serve your audience. Serve them ruthlessly. Like, I mean, give them unbelievable value. But realize, even if you can't quantify that or monetize that on day one, just the fact that you do this in an authentic, legitimate way over and over and over again, every additional project that you take on is more likely to be a success. And not everyone will be a success.
Yeah, man. So
but the cool thing is you're not limited to one shot. There, you can keep
like,
iterating until you find something.
A short project, a long project.
I love this idea.
Because that's not a thin book that I'm
building this thing over time. If you can do this from a place of relatively low risk, then there's no downside, nothing but upshot for you. And it's all about options. Yeah. 260 some odd pages. This is a 2-year labor of love. Within about 6 months, we knew that this was going to have to be a book at some point. So a podcast is an amazing thing, but it's not linear, right? You interact with the content the way that you do stories. And over time, you pull the principles out. But the stories were so amazing that we knew we wanted to pull that out and try to create a manual or a blueprint for this. What is it? What, if I could have you interact with this content in a linear, organized fashion that makes sense and is compelling and gives you what you need where you are, what does it look like? We've spent the last 2 years on bringing this book together. We worked with Chris Mamula to do it. And it is actually going live on October 1st.
That's awesome,
1st.
Dude. Would you say that self-publishing this book has been most challenging things like you guys have done since you started this?
Our product,
or was
right?
it an easy
this
process?
This is really born out of this. This is the first thing that's come out of this that is authentically ours. And it's really exciting to see our community take up the mantle and share it. And I think it's going to go places. It's probably additional conversation. Well, yeah, I think it may be one of the most fulfilling. We over time, as we've had this luxury, we've scaled and we built a team to support the effort. So like Jonathan, you know, could not have gotten us here, you know, but what I did is, and what we did is as we grew, we just looked for talent in our community. You know, people that were in our community that had, you know, shared their emails with us, come on our show in many cases. They would just, anybody that was looking to partner with us, we said, yes, let's do that, you know? And so we actually have a team of people now that support this effort. And I would say that the self-publishing, because of this, we're working with MK, she's the head of our publishing department. And because of that statement, it has not been the most stressful. It's actually been incredibly rewarding. And actually, I guess we'll kind of know, you know, if you were to ask me 2 months from now, it would be more of a look back. Right now, we're recording this on the 30th of September. The book's going to be released on the 1st of October. You know, that's the starting line right there. Everything was just the warm-up, right? It was all the warm-ups. Now it's the starting line. Now we're at the execution phase, and we'll see what happens with it. But it's one of those things, and this is a great point. Many authors, when they don't have a platform on their own, they need the book to be a New York Times bestseller right out the gate. They need to get as much publicity right out the gate. I never had that, like, feeling of like, oh, I have to crush this. I need this to show up on New York Times tomorrow. It doesn't have to, because again, this is a book that you made for your community, right? If your community is ambassadors, they're going to buy this book for their kids. They're going to share this book with their friends, someone that they've been trying to get to listen to the podcast, but they just won't. And as your brand grows, this is our flagship, right? This is always the book that we can point back to. You know how many authors, what an author would pay, you know, if we asked for that, and we don't charge anybody to come on the show, but what an author would pay to get their book advertised on our show, if that's the way that we did things, it would be a pretty significant amount of money to come on our show and just promote your book if we didn't just want to do it on our own. But our book grows with us as we grow. It is the heart of what we want to communicate. If we only have your attention and we only want you to get away a certain amount, like, this is it. And so, of course, it's going to be referenced. This isn't like something that, and no publisher is going to do that for you. They don't have the bandwidth. They're handling hundreds of books. But this is our baby, right? And that's a really cool opportunity. This book's always going to be on the wall behind me, you know? It's always going to be featured in some capacity. Threads and stories are going to be tied to it. It gets its own identity inside your brand. So thinking about your brand as an ecosystem, it's a big word, but as an ecosystem, it's a playground. You get to do what you want. Always make sure you're serving your audience first. But inside of that, it makes it a lot of fun. And it's why I think it was so boring in that old corporate job. I look back and I was constrained to the objectives set down by my district manager that were changing every 2 weeks, and something that they were like leaning on me for last week was forgotten in lieu of something else. But with this, with your brand, you
where
get to
can
pick
they pick up the book at?
What
I know
is
you said
you
in
make
stores,
your focus, right? What is it that's bringing the most value to your own life, to your community's life? And that is, it's so rewarding. It's always fun. It's always fresh.
That's
it's
awesome,
pretty cool
dude.
Place to be. And it's definitely
to wrap this thing
that,
up,
you know,
I'm going
to
put you on the spot.
As they start leaning
so somebody
into
is interested in this whole
one of the unexpected
financial
benefits.
Independence movement and the thought behind the lifestyle that can be created
absolutely.
From, you know, simple
it'll be
math.
Available anywhere books are found starting on
like,
October
what are
1st.
Like some,
and they can
I know
order
can
their
the
copy
book
at
shoesify.com now and the website and your guys' podcast. Like, what are like those core episodes or other resources that maybe aren't your guys' own that people can go to? Yeah.
Yeah. And actually this is, I'm going to answer this in two different ways. One, I'm actually just going to answer it for you, but the two, I'm going to kind of give you a strategy here for your listeners that I don't think a lot of people do. So like when you have, in your case, like 150 something episodes now, is that right? All right. It can be, you can get lost in it, right? Like what, how do you pull that out and you can give people a place to start so they don't feel overwhelmed? And so each episode gives enough value. Like if someone listens to 3 or 4 episodes and every single one of those episodes is adding tremendous value, there's a solid chance that they're going to go back to their archives and listen to everything. If someone listens to just one random one and then another random one and they're kind of meh, then they're probably gone forever, right? So this is a really important point in that what we did after just kind of having that realization, we created our essential listening list. When anyone subscribes to our podcast, it's one of the early emails that you would get within the first week or two. Like, hey, we've recorded 300 some odd episodes. Here's 50 that you should listen to. You know, if you enjoy these so much, you can always go back to the beginning and just listen to all of them. But like, these are the core concepts. And unsurprisingly, a lot of them are mirrored in here. These are the core concepts that we want you to
hear. In that order, 21,
so in our
19?
Case, we actually have an option down at the bottom of our homepage, choosify.com, where you can listen to the essential listening list. You get it in your email. And specifically for your audience, I would like for them to listen to episode 21, Pillars of Phi. I want them to listen to episode 19, The Simple Path to Wealth. You know, those two right there, when you compare it with, well, Pillars of Phi is some of the big ideas.
That's
19
awesome.
Is that,
and then
that
from
simplicity
there,
of investing.
I imagine
if they enjoy that,
resources,
you know,
on
if,
the
if that resonates
well
with them, I think there's a lot of value to the archives. You know, I'm very excited with the episodes that we produced up this point, and I think there's a real value to working their way through there. But
yeah.
I just think those two are so monumental that you should start with 21 and then go back and check out episode 19.
Awesome, Jonathan. This is, it's been a super cool interview for me,
we
just because as
yeah, I mean, the easiest way, honestly, what we try to do is create our email
list going
as
well,
like a guided listening experience.
So
just subscribe, you know, subscribe
similar
to our podcast,
path
go to our homepage
kind of
and get on our newsletter. We'll give you a list of all the episodes
that
we recommend and
you know,
kind of help guide you through our content.
True financial independence. I made the leap into building my own business as well. So I'm looking forward. Yeah. Yeah. And it's I think a big piece of this, and they say what's the old saying, like you're the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with.
And you can say one off it. If you said
that,
you say
they
one
don't
off
have to
that
be
it's
like
just like
neighbor,
an anomaly.
Right?
Oh,
can
look
be
at
like
that
who are you consuming
no,
every single day?
Like, as soon as you have options,
like
you jump
your guys
at
podcast,
the ones that resonate
like,
with
whatever
you.
It is
so
your
not,
goal.
I think you're
going to
see more and more of that, right?
You're going to start to, your mind is going to start to shift in that direction. So like for me, like I was, you know, over $200,000 in debt coming back from a trip, right? And then like I started consuming content like your guys and other people's, and my mind started shifting. Fast forward a little more than 2 years and I own a business. Never thought I would own a business. Don't have any debt. Had a shit ton of debt before that. So like it's all this stuff that like, you know, it's totally possible. There's hundreds and thousands of stories just like ours. We're not unique. So awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate it. And everything that we talked about will be down in the show notes. Go to Choose FI in your podcast, episodes 21, 19, and then episode 100. Listen to all that.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, and thanks for having me on the show. I've had a lot of fun.
Awesome, dude. Talk soon.
Perfect. Yeah, I tell you what, I'll set up a page for your audience if they want. Then you just go to choosefi.com/start, and it'll have some very easy ways to get involved and get started on your path to financial independence. All right, bud.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So, if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.